From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, peace in the Middle East. Life is promoted across many government agencies. A new history lesson for schools, and critical race theory, should it be government funded? Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christ follower, and all-around radio guy. This week, the Trump administration made headlines for a pair of historic agreements between Israel and Arab nations in the Middle East. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to discuss those agreements is the U.S. Ambassador to Israel, David Friedman.
Ambassador, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
Ambassador, let me just start with this. Explain to our listeners what took place today, the significance of these peace accords. What do they accomplish?
Well, what they accomplished in the first instance is creating the first peace agreement between Israel and an Arab nation in 26 years. The last one was 1994 with Jordan. Before that, it was 1978 with Egypt. And those are the only two peace agreements that Israel has had in its 72-year existence. Now, within a period of a month, we've doubled the number of peace agreements now to four, one with the United Arab Emirates and one with Bahrain. And what this does is it makes Israel safer, more secure, more prosperous. It opens up to Israel enormous opportunities for trade, for culture, for tourism, at a time when Israel's economy is, as all economies are around the world, under tremendous pressure. It gives Israel another trading partner, two trading partners of real consequence, at a time when Israel is trying to wean itself off of investment capital from China, which we believe is not in Israel's best interest or in the best interest of the United States. Israel now has an outstanding, safer, better source of capital to some extent from its new friends. But above all, we've taken people that for 50, 100 years have been enemies of each other, haven't spoken to each other. You couldn't make a phone call, from Israel to the Emirates until last week. The lines were blocked, and now all of a sudden you have people very, very quickly working together for the collective best interest. It's a wonderful model, a wonderful template for the region, and we believe it'll be followed by many other countries, all to the benefit of the region, and I think especially to the benefit of Israel.
I want to ask you this question, because today the foreign minister from the UAE mentioned that this halts the annexation of the Palestinian areas by Israel, which was a part of the Peace and Prosperity Plan that was rolled out earlier this year. So does this agreement in any form or fashion limit Israel's sovereignty over Judea and Samaria?
No, I don't believe it does. And let me, if you'll give me a couple of seconds, I want to, these are, it's a very important question. I like your, to make sure that your listeners understand this well. Number one, just a couple of different points. Until the Trump administration came around, the foreign policy of the United States, Republican and Democratic administrations alike, was that Jewish settlements, Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria were illegal. They were violative of international law. We reversed that policy. We reversed that legal analysis. Secretary Pompeo has concluded in a policy and legal statement that the Jewish settlements in Judea and Samaria do not violate international law. So that's something that we've done that no one had ever done before. When we put out our Peace to Prosperity Plan, we also had a very critical component in it, which is that no Jewish community within Judea and Samaria would ever be evacuated. Again, there's no other administration that's taken that position or anything close to it.
Let me provide some context, because that's what we're talking about happened in Gaza back in 2004, 2005, where that was given over to the Palestinians, and the Israelis that were living there were moved out, correct?
Correct, and it was a disaster.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I just want people to know what we were talking about there.
Yeah.
So you're saying that under this plan, that'll never happen again.
That'll never happen again. We learned a painful lesson from the evacuation of Gaza. Gaza was only 8,000 Israelis in a relatively remote part of the country, and it almost caused a civil war within Israel, and it has resulted in terror attacks that have been almost unending, including today, including this very afternoon. 13 Israelis were wounded from rocket attacks from Islamic Jihad coming out of Gaza. So Israel's not making that mistake again. We would never ask Israel to make that mistake again. The Jewish communities within Judea and Samaria, if Trump is president, we will never suggest that they leave, and our plan provides that they will never leave. The flags that fly there today, the Israeli flags that fly there today, will fly there forever. The last point that you made, which is where there has been a change, is the timing of the declaration of sovereignty, the timing under which Israel would make the political determination to apply its laws over the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria. That's been slowed down. It's been slowed down in order to pursue what we consider, and what I think all the Israelis consider, to be an enormous opportunity to make peace with these two countries and another, you know, 5 to 10 more. But there is no obligation on the part of Israel to stop or not to declare sovereignty. They'll work with the United States on timing.
Ambassador, we're going to have to leave it there, but I'm going to get you back on when you're back in the States to talk more about this. Ambassador Friedman, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, stick with us.
You can find out more about Ambassador Friedman when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, check out our new live weekly video broadcast designed to help you prepare for the upcoming election. It's called Pray, Vote, Stand, and you can find it at tonyperkins.com. The history of the United States is preserved in archives, books, and the collective memory of the American people. It is also preserved through monuments and memorials that visually represent the extraordinary history of our nation. Family Research Council has a new blog series highlighting the most popular monuments in our nation's capital. This series shares the historical and spiritual themes depicted in each monument. To read FRC's monument series, visit frcblog.org/monuments. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Did you know that the Trump administration is expanding protections for the unborn through a new policy for U.S. government agencies? The mainstream news certainly isn't covering this story, but we are. On Wednesday, Jenny Lichter, Deputy Assistant to the President for Domestic Policy, joined Tony Perkins to talk about this new policy.
Jenny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me, Tony. As a former FRC employee, I'm particularly thrilled to be with you.
Well, we're thrilled where you are and the work that you're doing, and we appreciate your joining us in the work that this administration is doing that you're a part of. Explain to our listeners this latest application of the Mexico City policy.
Sure. So as you said, Tony, putting in place the Mexico City policy is one of the first things that President Trump did very early on in this administration. This policy has been essentially a political football, right? Republican presidents put it up and Democrat presidents take it down at the first chance they get. But this administration, as you said, didn't want to just stick to the sort of standard Mexico City policy, as good as it is, started looking on day one for ways to expand it. So as you mentioned, we have put in place some expansions already and are always looking for ways to make sure that we're implementing it ever more carefully and taking every opportunity to cement this policy kind of in every nook and cranny of federal policymaking and grant making. So this week, a few more entities are proposing that they will include this key provision, this Mexico City policy provision limiting how certain types of funds can be made, will include it in their contracts that receive any global health assistance. So this is of a piece, again, with how we're trying to approach not just the Mexico City policy, but all pro-life policy, where we want to be using every tool that's available to the executive branch to be protecting life at home and abroad. And we want to be using taxpayer money responsibly and avoiding using taxpayer money to pay for or promote abortions in any way. So we're really excited about this new opportunity to just, again, kind of cement this policy a little bit more, expand it a little bit more.
I want to underscore that point, Jenny, because this is you know, almost 4 years in the march. And oftentimes what I've seen in my 25 years in the political realm is that you make an announcement, you get the headlines, and then you move on, and it may or may not get done. This has been a systematic application of the president's commitment to making sure that taxpayers were not on the hook to fund abortion or promote abortion in our foreign policy. And he put a team in place, yourself included, that's looking, how do we apply this? What's an area that has not been covered by this? So this is an ongoing process.
That is exactly right. And I'll just flag, too, for your listeners, an exciting report that a few of our agencies put out just a few weeks ago about the implementation of the Mexico City policy. And that report is, it's a little bit of a weedy deep dive into what implementation looks like, but it gives a lot of information about what happened when this policy was put in place. And it's a good news story. It shows that, well, for the most part, our grantees around the world agreed to the Mexico City policy condition, contra what you might hear from the left, that right, trying to maintain pro-life principles scares people away in the global health space. In a few cases, there were a few grantees who declined to agree to this condition for ideological reasons. And that includes, by the way, International Planned Parenthood and Marie Stopes, who are major abortion funders and promoters. But the agencies were right away able to pivot to other providers who stepped in to provide the health programming that we want to be funding. So in my mind, this is just a great, great story about how principled pro-life policies and provision of quality health care to women and girls around the world do not conflict, despite what you might hear from the left. We can do both of these things at once, and the U.S. remains fully committed to being the largest funder of global health programming around the world, but also stand by our pro-life commitments and show the world how we can do those things simultaneously.
Just to summarize, Jenny, on the way out here, is that while the left says, oh, this is going to hurt the provision of services, the report shows very clearly there's been no decline in the services. We can do this and do it in a pro-life way.
That is exactly right.
All right, Jenny Lichter, thanks so much for joining us, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You can find out more about the president's pro-life policies when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program. Just visit tonyperkins.com and click on the donate button. That's tonyperkins.com.
Leftist activists are calling for increased taxpayer funding of abortions. We must be vigilant in our defense of the unborn and push for pro-life legislation. Despite state and federal efforts to spare taxpayers from being forced to fund the abortion industry, the industry still receives millions of dollars each year in taxpayer money. To inform you on the issue, Family Research Council has released a newly updated pro-life map that tracks state funding of the abortion industry. Go to frc.org/pro-life maps to see where your state stands in the fight for life.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. We all know that our public schools are indoctrinating children at a younger and younger age to hate our country. But this week, the president announced an effort to bring back patriotic history lessons to our schools. Joining Tony Perkins to discuss that effort is the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos.
Secretary, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much, Tony. It's great to be with you.
Glad to have you on the program, and thrilled to see what the president is doing and what you're doing on education. And he made some comments earlier this week about the fact that many young people are being fed lies about America, and they're hating the very country that is giving opportunity. And I think that is the genesis behind the president's announcement today in this commission that's being established. Is that right?
Absolutely. I so appreciate the president's leadership on bringing a renewed focus to our founding documents and the Constitution and the importance of the words that are in the Constitution and what that means for everyone in this country. Unfortunately, as you've noted, we know that too many young people today have very little knowledge or understanding of history and of how their government is actually constructed and what the original founders had in mind.
Yeah, if you really don't know history and it's not been taught to you and you don't have an understanding of it, how can you have an appreciation for the country? It's almost impossible.
Absolutely right. And I think we're unfortunately seeing some of the downstream implications of that ignorance in some of our major cities across the country today.
Yes.
And so, again, I really am appreciative of the president's focus on this and the announcement of the creation of a commission, 1776 commission, that will bring a renewed focus to the importance of learning our history, of appreciating what we have learned from history and what we don't want to repeat in the future, because we know that if you do not learn history, you are doomed to repeat things in history that we really don't want to relive.
Very true. And I think your connection, Secretary DeVos, of what's been happening in the classrooms, spilling over into the streets, is so true. And I know the president has made that connection. I know the media doesn't like it, but it's true. It's what's happened. But there's more here. This is about building a better tomorrow. And this is I want to just read a quote from President Trump on Monday. He said this. He said, quote, "The only path to unity is to rebuild a shared national identity focused on common American values and virtues of which we have plenty." To that I say a hearty amen. If our children really knew what America was about, I think they would have a greater appreciation for the country in which they live.
There's no doubt about that. No doubt about that at all. And again, I think this renewed focus on the importance of learning history and learning about our government and its formation and how to actually take the founding intent and build on it. And I've said often that we have to learn from history so that we learn what not to do and what to do in the future. And that toward a more perfect union indicates a progression. It's a process, not an event.
Yes. Yes. So true. Well, Secretary DeVos, again, we applaud this move and what you've been doing over at the Department of Education. And we look forward to seeing this go forward and assisting as we can to help people rediscover what America is really all about.
Well, thanks so much, Tony.
You can find out more about Secretary DeVos when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program. Just visit tonyperkins.com and click on the donate button. That's tonyperkins.com.
Do you ever look at the state of our nation and ask yourself, what can I do? Well, this year's Values Voter Summit is going viral, and it's an event for people just like you who want all human life to be valued, families to flourish, and for religious liberty to thrive. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Dr. Ben Carson, and Dana Loesch. Register today for your free digital pass to join us virtually from September the 22nd to the 25th. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. With so much division in our country right now, some members of Congress were surprised to find out that government agencies were spending tax dollars on critical race theory training. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about it is Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before we jump into the what you discovered, let's talk just first, give our listeners kind of an understanding. There's this discussion of this critical race theory. Why is this a problem?
Well, critical race theory has its roots in Marxism, really. It's the theory that says that America is systemically racist, is structurally oppressive. Like Marxism, it tends to identify Christianity as a form of structural oppression and institutions, culture, traditions that are built around the Christian faith, that are derived from the Christian faith, as being structurally inherently oppressive, of course, also very hostile to free markets and free enterprise. And that's really the intellectual origins of much of critical race theory and what became sort of a social Marxism in the middle of the last century. And now, Tony, we find it all over our universities. It's been very common in universities for decades now, and it's making its way into the federal government and into the rhetoric of the radical left. And we've heard it all over this summer from the radical left. And now we're seeing taxpayer dollars being used to try and teach it. And that is, I think, where it's time we draw the line.
And that's what you've done here. We've got a federal agency. In fact, it's not just one, there's many. But with taxpayer dollars in these training sessions with federal workers, we actually see this anti-American divisive curriculum that's being driven throughout the administration or throughout the federal government. Talk about what you discovered and what you've called for.
Thanks to the reporting of some great investigative journalists, we discovered that at Sandia Labs in New Mexico, under the authority of the Department of Energy, there were actually taxpayer-funded retreats at a resort, by the way. I mean, it couldn't just go out and do this at any normal place, but it had to be a resort, taxpayer-funded, to send Sandia Lab employees to go get training in critical race theory and to learn to understand how America's structurally racist, there's structural oppression everywhere, to embrace these theories. It's unbelievable. If you look at the curriculum, of course, it's also very anti-conservative, anti-Trump. But most importantly, it's anti-America. And it is, in its origins, Marxist. The idea that we would be spending taxpayer money on this at resorts, no less, is outrageous. So I called for an immediate accounting and investigation. I'm delighted to tell you that the secretary of the Department of Energy immediately launched a full department-wide review. And then, as you alluded to, the president signed an executive order not long after banning the teaching of critical race theory across all federal executive agencies, which was a great move.
In to your point, the secretary responded, but as I was reading some of it, part of it was they had no clue it was going on. It's so pervasive and so commonplace that it's not even recognized until you start to pull back the curtain, so to speak, and begin to dig a little bit.
And part of this is, Tony, it has become so pervasive at universities, critical race theory and other forms of critical theory, critical gender studies. There are a number of these critical critiques that all share a common ideological framework. It's so common at universities that we're seeing more and more folks in the federal government, managers and so forth, who have been taught this and believe it and think that there's nothing wrong with it. And now they're trying to push it to federal employees using federal tax dollars. But it's time we called this out for the radicalism that it is. It's time we discussed its Marxist roots and identify the fact that this is not the America that we know, that it badly misrepresents American history, and it is, as you say, deeply divisive. You want to divide people in this country, that's how you do it.
Senator, before we let you go, I want to shift gears for just a moment, because you've been on something else, drawing attention to what's been happening over at Netflix.
Absolutely. And what the Cuties movie, their film that they are distributing, is something that I've called for Netflix to take down. It's basically child pornography, Tony. And sexually exploitative material involving children in this film. I've asked Netflix to respond again in writing to me as to whether or not they inquired as to whether children were sexually abused during this film. Had they talked with experts about the danger of copycat pedophilic behavior that can be encouraged from this film? There's lots of data, as prosecutors can tell you, about what happens when this kind of material is widely available. But right. Netflix really needs to be held to account here for their complicity in this, in distributing this kind of material. They're out there arguing that, oh my goodness, that this is art, and that you shouldn't criticize it, and that if you do criticize it, you're some sort of right-wing wacko. I'm sorry, but distributing material that features the sexual abuse of young children is just wrong, and it should not happen. It's also potentially illegal, and so I support an investigation by the Department of Justice as well.
Well, it's not just those on the right. Even those on the left have raised alarms about this. Nancy Pelosi's own daughter has said that this is too much. I want to put a bug in your ear about that last point of the Department of Justice. This is something I think that where we have a lack of focus at the Department of Justice. There are lots going on. But the obscenity laws, I think in part what we see with Netflix is because of a lack of enforcement of clear violations of obscenity laws has allowed them to push the envelope on other things.
And what we're seeing here with this film, Tony, just to underscore that point, we're not just talking here about language that may be offensive or inappropriate. We're not talking about storytelling that is somehow offensive. We're talking about actual sexual exploitation of minor children. And when I say minor, we're talking about 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds in the film that was actually performed as part of the film. This is incredible. We have laws against this sort of sexual abuse of children in this country. And again, for Netflix to be distributing this without any kind of taking any responsibility for it, I think is wrong, and it needs to be stopped. The film should come down.
Well, and I would encourage you to keep the pressure on them and to continue to call for the Department of Justice to investigate. But I would also encourage you to call on them to become more aggressive in enforcing the obscenity laws that we have in this country, because I think they have gone far too long without being enforced, and I think that has given a green light to those that would, in this case, abuse children.
Yes, yes. Yeah, Tony, I think you're right about that, and we see here with this film just how far folks are willing to push it, and the fact that, again, if Netflix would do this without blinking an eye and is now out there in public mounting a full-throated campaign to deflect blame and defend themselves, I think really tells you sort of the shamelessness that corporation at least has towards this issue involving child welfare.
Well, I think it's a reflection of the coarsening of the culture that has taken place, and all the more reason we need to hold up a standard and enforce that standard. And I appreciate the fact that you're a part of that on Capitol Hill in the Senate, and I appreciate you joining us today, Senator.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.